This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. In this segment, what if things get worse in Iraq? President Bush rules out all strategic options in Iraq that he says would lead to defeat. He speaks instead of success. The Iraq Study Group calls the situation grave and deteriorating, but it makes dozens of recommendations to accomplish the mission to leave Iraq a country that can govern, sustain, and defend itself. Much of what we hear about Iraq these days is best-case thinking. But what if the militias are not reined in? What if the great Iraqi political bargain between Sunni and Shia is not struck? What if things don't come together, but continue to fall apart instead? Well, we've asked some foreign policy thinkers to think worst case for us. What might it be like? And in that case, what should the U.S. do? For Shibli Telhami, the Anwar Sadat Professor for Peace and Development at the University of Maryland, things could deteriorate in three dimensions.
One is the humanitarian, obviously. As bad as things are, as disastrous as they can get far more disastrous. And I'm talking about all-out civil war. I'm talking about ethnic cleansing, bloodshed. So that's one. The second is spillover effect. It's not just about Iraq. It's about what might happen in other countries, whether it's Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, for that matter, or Syria. And the third is the power of al-Qaeda. People, you know, sort of forget that in the end, it isn't really about the insurgency. People who want America out of Iraq, well, that's one thing. But people who are after America, no matter what, like al-Qaeda, is a completely different threat.
If there is a wider civil war spilling over Iraq's borders with al-Qaeda emboldened, Shibli Telhami says in that worst case, U.S. policy should be to prevent the conflict claiming other countries as casualties. In Jordan, he says, people strongly support Iraqi Sunnis, strongly oppose Israel, and strongly oppose U.S. support for Israel. Telhami says, push for a diplomatic settlement of the Arab-Israeli conflict, and by doing so, bolster the pro-Western Jordanian government. Also, Telhami says, U.S. military forces will remain in the Persian Gulf region, and that would reassure smaller Gulf states concerned about Iran's ambitions.
I would go further than that. I would say making sure that we don't have anarchy in Syria and Lebanon becomes of the highest priority. If you look at the consequence of emboldenment of al-Qaeda and by default the transnational groups that are going to be inevitably strengthened by a disintegration of Iraq, there's going to be a huge risk for destabilizing Syria. And that's not a good thing, even though people don't like the Syrian government and its foreign policy. It still is a stabilizing force, and it is deterrable. And I think if you have the sort of anarchy that we now have in Iraq in a place like Syria, that's consequential for other interests, including the Arab-Israeli issue. So in fact, one of the strong reasons for pushing for an Israeli-Syrian agreement to bring Syria into the fold is down the road pushing for more stabilization of Syria and therefore Lebanon, because the two are tied, as a key component of preventing any further violence in Iraq from undermining stability in the region and other American interests in the region.
That's political scientist Shibli Telhami of the University of Maryland. I put the same questions to Kenneth Edelman, who, as a member of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board, was an advocate of the Iraq War. He has since become disillusioned with its execution. Edelman says there is still a small chance, in his view, of avoiding the worst case, which would be Iraq's descent into something like Lebanon in the mid-1970s, a civil war, a government with no authority.
It's a bunch of neighbors getting involved, like Syria and Israel in that time. In Iraq, it would be certainly the Saudis, certainly the Iraqis who are heavily involved now, and certainly the Turks. And it would be, in Iraq itself, a lawlessness, a Lord of the Flies kind of situation.
Well, let's assume that while Washington might not want it to be the outcome, that Iraq circa 2007-2008 looks a lot like Lebanon circa 1978. What should U.S. policy be?
The easiest answer is, of course, to preclude that nightmare from happening. If the worst-case scenario comes about, I think we have an obligation to our wonderful young men and women who are serving there so nobly is to get them out of harm's way, because they can't do any good there with people shooting at each other and total lawlessness. Number two is we really have to work with regional powers there, the Saudis and others, The Jordanians have been helpful, the Egyptians somewhat, in trying to stop this drive, Robert, of radical Islam.
The U.S. has been protecting the Kurds of Iraq since the end of the first Gulf War. Should policy, regardless of what happens in the rest of the country, be a continued protection of Iraqi Kurdistan?
Inasmuch as we stay involved in Iraq, I think the answer is yes. But it's going to be hard to keep troops there when they're being shot up for nothing.
So possibly not even provide the same kind of protections we did in the 1990s to the Kurds.
That's correct.
Should the worst case in Iraq affect U.S. policy toward the Israeli-Arab dispute? Should it be a catalyst for greater diplomatic activity by the U.S.?
I know that's what everybody says, but it seems to me that that problem is so intractable that on the Palestinian side these days there's really not a group that you can really deal with. There's a civil war between the PLO and Hamas there, and till they have some kind of responsible leadership or even some kind of single leadership for the Palestinians, I think that's hopeless.
It's Kenneth Edelman, formerly of the Pentagon and the Defense Policy Board. Next, Leslie Gelb of the Council on Foreign Relations. For him, what does the worst-case outcome look like?
The worst-case in Iraq is where the present civil war, insurgency, daily terrorism, which is in about 6 to 8 of the provinces, spreads to the other provinces, first south into Shia land, and maybe even north to where the Kurds are. And you have generalized civil war throughout the country.
And while that's not the case right now, and may not become the case, Leslie Gelb says, Washington should be planning for it just the same.
The U.S. should anticipate the worst right now. It should not wait for the worst to happen. And there are a whole series of actions we can take that make sense whether or not the worst occurs. And I would suggest 5 things. First, let's make a serious effort at a political settlement, a political power-sharing deal among the Iraqis. And I really think that has to be some kind of federal solution. The central government approach, which we've tried for 3 years, hasn't worked and will never work. Second, we must help Iraqis who want to move from areas where they're being killed to areas of safety. We've got to provide them the means, the protection, and the funds to set up a new life. We owe that to them. Third, once we start removing some of our troops, we need to make alliance with the Sunni Baathists in the center of the country to fight our common enemy, namely the jihadi terrorists. And they'll do a better job of fighting the terrorists than we will. Fourth, we need to make alliance with the Shias in the south, because here, too, we have a great common interest. Those Shias are Iraqis and Arabs. They are not Persians. And this is an enormous difference. The Iraqi Shia will want to preserve their independence from Tehran. They won't want to be ruled from Tehran any more than we want Tehran to run Iraq. And finally, we ought to begin doing what Jim Baker and Lee Hamilton suggested, starting this long, intricate process of building up regional diplomatic activity to support an eventual outcome inside Iraq.
Leslie Gelb adds that he thinks the U.S. should be doing more to advance an Arab-Israeli peace, which he says is a good idea in its own merits, but it's not what the fighting in Iraq is all about. Jessica Tuckman Matthews, the president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, adds some other dimensions to a worst-case U.S. strategy, diplomatic outreach to some other parties.
I believe that the nascent civil war that we see will fight itself out, and that that takes a long, long, long time to reestablish some other balance of power among various factions.
While Iraqi factions are battling in that prolonged civil war, what does the U.S. do?
I think it has less to do with things inside Iraq than trying to contain some of the other crises in the region. If it were me, I would be, first of all, trying to repair relationships with Russia, because that's the key to getting an outcome with Iran on nuclear, a positive outcome. And the U.S.-Russian relationship is a mess and getting worse. Secondly, we have to turn our attention to moderate Islamists in the region. People who believe in Islam as a political force but eschew violence because these are the hope for a more democratic evolution in the region. It's not the Western-style Democrats. They're a tiny, tiny minority. And I would be turning my attention vigorously back to the Israeli-Palestinian crisis. As you know, before the war, people were saying the road to Jerusalem lies through Baghdad. The road to Baghdad certainly curves around Jerusalem if it doesn't lie right through it.
When you talk about moderate Islamists, people who might be inclined not toward jihadist violence but see Islam as a political approach, whom are you thinking of?
Well, the best known is the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, which is officially outlawed as a political party, but who has members, a large number of members in the Egyptian parliament even now. Modern Islamists are of many different stripes. They hold different views on issues like the role of women, elections, and their thinking is evolving. But right now, the U.S. policy is not to talk to any of them. And that is to cut ourselves off from the hope for the most positive outcome in the region.
And for people who hear you say Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and they say, I'm an al-Zawahiri of al-Qaeda or the assassination of Anwar Sadat?
This is a very different kind of group. By moderate Islamists, I am specifically excluding those who believe in violence as a political tool.
And Jessica Matthews of the Carnegie Endowment adds this warning. The situation in Iraq is closer to worst case than Washington policymakers might like to think.
We are pretty close to it. That is to say that one constant feature of this war from the very beginning has been that it has always been far worse on the ground in Iraq than Washington or American public opinion understands at any given moment. So assume it's 6 months worse than we are thinking here.
It may not be the most encouraging thing you've heard about the war in Iraq, but a lot of people who think about U.S. foreign policy for a living figure, planning for the worst always makes sense, especially in a conflict where so many hopeful forecasts of the past have gone unfulfilled.